by Sen. Sen, S-E-I-N.
Okay.
Is that one of Osborne's pseudonyms? He died, this is Mountain Pass, 1970. So he died that year, Oscar Osborne. While this article was being written for the press, we received news of the demise of the Muslim friend and classmate of Sri Bhagavan, described it. Usman of Sri Bhagavan described in it. He was nearly 90 years old when he passed away peacefully after a brief illness, to the great sorrow of his family and friends left behind. May his soul rest in peace. A few years back, it came to my knowledge that a close friend and classmate of Sri Bhagavan, then a retired police inspector nearing 80 years, unable to see and hear properly, was living with his son in Neyveli. When Ramana Maharaj, how far is Neyveli from Tiruvannamalai?
Neyveli.
Maybe close.
What?
1 or 2 hours. Very close, not very far.
When Ramana Maharshi, then Venkataranam, or Venkataram Raman of Tiruchuli, was attending the American Mission High School in Madurai in his fourth, fifth, and sixth forms, a Muslim boy was his intimate friend. Venkataraman was very fond of him and used to call him Sab Jan. What does it mean, Sab Jan?
Sab Jan.
Sab Jan.
Sab Jan. Sab Jan.
Sab
is
your
sir.
Jan is your sir.
Yeah.
And Jan is dear.
Dear.
So his real name was M. Abdul Wahab. I went especially to Neyveli to meet him. Abdul Wahab welcomed me very kindly. I was struck by the serenity in his face. I requested him to give me an account of those days that he spent with Venkataraman in school. It was a thrilling experience to listen to his reminiscences of the friendly intimacy that he enjoyed with Venkataraman, the great Sri Ramana Maharshi, in later years. We were, quote, we were inseparable mates. Mm. Venkataraman was very good in Tamil and stood first in the class in the subject. When the teacher wanted to refer to some portions to the Tamil textbook, he used to ask Venkataraman to quote that passage, which my friend did with remarkable clarity. He was particularly well-versed in Nanul Sutram, aphorisms of Tamil grammar.
What is it?
Aphorisms.
Nanul.
Tamil grammar. Grammar.
Nanul Sutram.
You heard of that book?
Yeah.
Our Tamil teacher was very fond of him. Venkataraman was not so good in English, though in other subjects also above average in general. He was not much interested in his school books. He was very fond of playing games and was an expert in football. Not NFL football, right? He used to encourage me to join him in playing the game, saying that he would teach me how. We used to play together in the same team, and I was particular to be always on his side. In those days, Brahmin boys were not encouraged to take part in games, and Venkataraman's relatives were not pleased about it. Once when we were playing football, Venkataraman, while defending the game, received a severe knock on his right leg, which immediately started swelling. He could not continue to play. So I carried him to the hospital where they attended to the injured leg and brought it back to normal. He was very happy and thanked me for the timely help. Even as a schoolboy, he was very religious-minded. Every Saturday and Sunday, he would go to Tiruparankuram, one of the famous six centers of Lord Subramanya. That's the one like a couple miles out of town.
Mm.
Yes. That's where he got the prasad that one time and he had to carry it on his head.
No, that's Aragakur. That's a different temple.
Yeah, I've been to that one, but I don't know if I've been to that
one. Close to Madhya. But this is carved inside the hill. Like the
there's a hill behind temple. It. There's a hill behind it? No, that's the other
no,
one.
No, no. This temple has been carved into the hill.
Oh, into the hill. I don't think I went to that one. I'm not sure.
Outskirts of Madurai.
Okay. And go around the Subramanya Swami temple with fervent devotion. Sometimes he used to take me with him and make me go around the temple saying, God's creation is alike, and there is no differentiation in it. God is one and the same. The apparent differences in religions are created by man. In his company, I never felt any difference between a mosque and the Subramanya temple, Subramanya Swami temple. This instruction of his really implanted in me a better understanding of the inner approach to religion, and thenceforth I stopped differentiating between them. I'm certain that because of such an outlook implanted in me by Venkataraman in those early days, I could later become an ardent devotee of Sri Varadaraja Purumal in Kanchipuram, who actually gave me the experience of divine rapture. I had visions of Varadaraja Purumal in dreams, and they proved to be of great help to me. Abdul Wahab's strange attachment to Lord Varadaraja is interesting. He told me that for 12 years, in spite of objections from some Vaishnavites, he was able to take part actively in the Garuda Seva of Sri Varadaraja Purumal by helping to carry the deity in procession in the streets of Kanchipuram.
Well, yeah.
So they will let a Muslim do that?
Yeah, I know. Better days.
Rare.
Better days.
Better days. Really? How?
Which he regarded to this day a great privilege. This service increased his devotion to Purumal, who once assured him in a dream that his wife would recover from a sudden illness which was causing anxiety, and so she did. Continuing his reminiscences, Abdul Wahab said, suddenly one day Venkataraman disappeared. It was a shock to me that he did not even tell me about his intention of running away from home. His disappearance caused great anxiety and sorrow to his mother. Here I must mention the great kindness and love with which Mother Alagamal used to treat me. Some weekends, Venkataraman would go to Tiruchuli to be with his mother and relatives. I would also follow him there.
Oh.
Mother Aludamaru would immediately, on seeing me, announce my arrival with affection, saying, "Your dear Muslim friend has come." She used to, she was very orthodox, right, in those days, according to Bhagavan. "Your dear Muslim friend has come." She used to give me whatever food was ready. If by chance I did not turn up for a weekend, she would inquire about my absence and give Venkataraman tidbits to be given to his Muslim friend. Mm-hmm. I can never forget the maternal love of Aragamo and her kindness to me. Muslims were not so kindly treated by caste Brahmins in those days. They were regarded as untouchables. I interrupted, requesting him to tell me how he learned of Maharshi's whereabouts. He said, 1903, in one of the medical shops in Uttaramiru. Where is that? Must be Tamil Nadu.
It's the famous place where the Brahmin Sabhas were there.
The Brahmins what?
There were Brahmin Sabhas in Uttaramiru.
Sabha.
This is over 1,000 years ago, where they were having committees and they were having a democracy, functioning democracy. The Uttaramiru temple, there were inscriptions describing the Chola
so
period.
A lot of history there.
Yeah, a lot of history.
This is where I was employed in the police force. I was surprised to see a portrait of Venkataraman put completely, but completely changed in appearance. I was curious to know how the shopman happened to possess this photograph of my classmate. So that must be the one, the first picture of him.
The first picture, yeah.
Because 1903. He informed me that this was the Brahmana Swami living in Tiruvannamalai and that the Swami was in Mona then. I was very eager to meet Venkataraman. And at last, after several years of strenuous efforts, I was able to come to Sri Yamanashramam, the abode of Sri Maharshi, my one-time dear friend. I was taken to Bhagavan by a cowherd woman who used to supply milk to people. I introduced myself as his classmate, Sahib John, but Maharshi's face clearly showed that he had recognized me at once. He was pleased to receive me, but did not speak. He simply nodded his head with a radiant face. I was thrilled to meet my classmate as a Swami, all the more beautiful and resplendent with a mark of Shanti. Oh, of saintliness. Again, I went there when I was the inspector of police in Tiruppattur. I was very sad then because my father had passed away. Bhagavan showed me his mother's tomb, which consoled me since I understood from his action that death is inevitable as far as the body is concerned and that no one was either born or died. He was very gracious and offered me some refreshments, asking me to stay for a couple of days, but I could not do so since I was on duty. After that, I went to see him several times, and on all occasions, he showed me special attention and introduced me to whoever was present with deep love and kindness. He used to make me sit by his side while taking food in the dining hall, which later I came to know was quite unusual with him. A sudden change took place in me. I was transformed into a devotee of Bhagavan from being a friend of Venkataraman. This change brought in by Sri Maharshi is the greatest boon he has showed on me. He showed his greatness once through a dream in which he forewarned me of my wife's passing away and consoling me in a mysterious way. He prepared me for the shock. It did take place very soon afterwards, and my beloved wife passed away as predicted. By the grace of Bhagavan, I gained enough detachment not to be afflicted very much. In 1950, on the 14th of April, the memorable day of his Brahma Nirvana, I had the opportunity of coming to the ashram unexpectedly. Because it would have been absolutely impossible for me then to come to Tiruvannamalai under ordinary circumstances, as I was on duty in some place far away. I came just in time when Bhagavan passed away that night. That day, I had no time to go to a hotel for a meal. I paid my homage to my friend and guru and left his mortal coil, but whose presence still pervaded his abode. I was in deep mourning, Then someone asked me to take food, since I looked fatigued and tired, and it was late in the night. I flatly refused, preferring to fast the whole day as an act of reverence and homage to my intimate friend and reverend guru. I thanked Abdul Wahab and took leave of him as a classmate of Bhagavan with reverence. He did not stop at being a classmate, but went further and understood Venkataraman as Bhagavan Sri Ramana Maharshi. There's a little article by T.P. Ramachandraya. Sadhaka and Siddhis. Prominent among the impediments besetting the path of an aspirant of true knowledge or realization are the allurements of occult powers, siddhis, and yogic feats for gaining desired objectives, which deflect him from his path. These are not and never have been an abiding solution for life's problems. The happiness felt as gained by enjoyments and benefits derived from them have been transitory and of no avail against recurrent misery and frustrations of life. Whether in the waking state or even in dreams, such experiences of siddhis are permanent enjoyments and illusory. The siddha, retaining his individuality as subject, apprehends desired objects for pleasure or enjoyment by functioning of the mind. The perennial self in him is not limited by the dual relationship or the changing states which come and go. The self-evident I in us persists as underlying and beyond them. The yogi communing from a distance, or conjuring up in objectivity, is no more marvelous than modern telepathy or television. Yet without the hearer or seer subject, there cannot be the hearing or vision. Both subject and object arise only when the mind has arisen. That which is not natural, but acquired, cannot be permanent, and is not worth striving for. Regaining one's own true state of being by self-knowledge, which is liberation or mukti, is to be aimed at. This is an article by, I remember reading this one, Vaclav Chech, An Indian Pilgrimage. In 1945, I started attending a circle of followers of Paul Brunton, then known as Raphael Hirst, a London journalist whose book, A Search in Secret India, made Sri Bhagavan known in the early days of the ashram. This book became quite famous and brought many devotees to Tiruvannamalai. Thus I learned about Sri Ramana Maharshi. I heard more about him 2 years later from one well-informed countryman who returned after many years abroad to my native town, Praha, capital of Czechoslovakia, after World War II. Sri Ramana Maharshi prescribed no special conditions for spiritual practice, and that is why his teaching is so universally valid and applicable. He performed no outstanding miracles, preached no undue mysteries, practiced no exacting rituals, played to no exciting gallery, propagated no esoteric dogmas, programmed no sectarianism. The teaching of Sri Ramana Maharshi spoke direct to my heart And I felt this was the only way for me. However, the conditions that they developed in Central Europe were neither favorable for establishing good relations with foreign countries nor for spiritual endeavors. In a letter of April 1957 to the management of the ashram, I asked for spiritual instruction. I got a reply from the president saying that suitable literature had been forwarded to my address, but I never received it. You know, it was communist, right? Somebody in the office was reading it. Professor K. Swaminathan from Madras came to Praha as the head of an Indian delegation of national craft workers in January 1959. Craft workers. He attended with the exchange, huh? I was agreeably surprised by greetings from the ashram and by being given a publication, Ramana Maharshi and the Path of Self-Knowledge by Arthur Osborne, a review copy of the Jayco Publishing House in Bombay. You know, it was first published outside the ashram. Yeah. I used to turn inwards in the effort to reach self-realization. And something peculiar happened to me. Though only in a dream, I dreamed I entered a bright, sunlit room. In this room, I saw, to the left, Sri Ramana Maharshi. He stood with his back to the entrance in European dress at a lecturer's desk. Before him, there were a few short rows of seats, which he faced. Passing him on the right side, I bowed to him and took a seat. I noticed that in the auditorium only two places were occupied. I looked at Sri Bhagavan. He gazed at me silent and concentrated. After that, I had a very definite feeling that I ought to rise and go to him. I did so. Without a word, he gave me his hand. After that, I returned to my seat. I woke with a feeling of peace and bliss. Quite unusually, the dream was very vivid, so that I retained a very clearly in my mind. Time passed on. And once I had a strange experience. I found myself in a flood of peace and light early one morning, just on the point of waking from a dreamless sleep. I tried hard to understand what was the matter, striving to wake up. Immediately, I regretted what I had done. What I had known only from books and by hearsay to that time was now quite clear to me. I experienced the self in its purity, my real being, when, without thoughts, between two states of sleep and waking. In Czechoslovak state, Airlines, started to fly from Praha to Bombay in 1959. But the chance to travel to India came only in 1965, when we were able to pay for the air tickets in Czech money. It was possible to leave the country on a written invitation from friends abroad. The host had to promise in a letter to look after the invited person and to pay all the expenses for him. The idea occurred to me to try to visit Ramanashrama. I asked the president, Venkataraman, for the necessary invitation in July 1967. I did so remembering Bhagavan saying, "Whatever is destined to happen in accordance with past deeds, Parabdha karma will happen. Do what you may to stop it. Whatever is destined not to happen will not happen, however hard you may try." Bhagavan's first written upadesa. There was one before that. There was one written upadesa before that.
What is that?
What is that? On the wall in Guru Mortam. Food is enough for this.
This is enough.
Food is enough
for this.
On August 23rd, 1967, I received with great pleasure the kind invitation of the president of the ashram for a 3-month stay in the ashram. I landed on Indian soil in 1967 after midnight, and in addition, without any Indian currency. Fortunately, all went well thanks to devotee friends who had been notified by the ashram management and were waiting for me at the airport. I arrived at Ramanashramam in Thiruvannamalai on October 28, 1967, which happened to be the Independence Day of the Czechoslovak Republic, declared after World War I. The ashram is situated at the foot of Arunachala, a sacred hill, forming a conspicuous object in the landscape for miles around. I was given a room in the ashram and went about visiting places of interest. I walked around the sacred hill, Giri Pradakshina, on a full moon night, reached the summit of Arunachala twice in the course of my stay, and enjoyed the tranquility there. The old hall and a small building where the Maharshi spent his last days are pervaded by an atmosphere of peace. I was fortunate enough to get to know personally in Ramana Nagar the surviving older devotees of Sri Bhagavan who have lived as members of his family. The second international conference seminar of Tamil studies was held in Madras in January 1968. My countrymen from Praha attended it, and one of them, Dr. Kamal Zwailabil, was general secretary of this conference. He visited Ramanashramam. I left for Madras, and on the way stopped for 4 days at Aurobindo Ashram in Pondicherry. One of my friends in Czechoslovakia asked me to do this, being a follower of this movement. In this connection, I recall the following story, which an Indian friend told me. Mr. H. Chattopadhyaya, an Indian author, was once questioned about his opinion of Sri Aurobindo and Sri Ramana Maharshi. The writer was heard to say this: Sri Aurobindo is a great personality and Sri Ramana Maharshi is a great impersonality. This has been quoted many times. His reply evidently might be an illustration how it is possible with a few words to say a great deal. In Madras, I met my countrymen, as well as Dr. T.M.P. Mahadevan, director of the Center of Advanced Studies and Philosophy at the University of Madras. He is famous as one of the leaders of Advaita, and he is a staunch devotee of Sri Ramana Maharshi. He opened like a Shankara Center in Madras.
In Madras, yes.
You know, I don't know if you've ever been there. I think it's still going. After visiting various places of interest, I wended my way to Ananda Ashram of the late Swami Ram Das in Kanadgad. I spent in the peaceful and pure spot 3 weeks under the loving attention of Mother Krishnabai. We used to correspond with her from here in the early 70s. Yeah. What's that letter somewhere? Swami Satchitananda and others. Who runs the ashram now there?
I don't
know. Ananda Ashram. You know, Swami Ram Das Ashram. After Swami Satchitananda passed away.
No, nowadays I think Swami Pranavananda, he heads the Ananda Ashram.
After Ram Ram
Yeah, yeah.
No, 24/7.
Yeah.
You
write Ram Ram and deposit it as a bank.
He went to Bhagavan.
K.K. Nambiar at that point, very much. He was mainly responsible to connect to Kandangarhi train station. Nambiar. K.K. Nambiar.
Afterwards, I stopped for a few days in Kaladi. Kaladi,
Kaladi.
The birthplace of Shankaracharya. That great spiritual leader who reestablishes the supremacy of Vedanta, leaving colorful, exotic, and lush Kerala, I went to the southernmost point of the Indian peninsula of Cape Comorin, or Kanyakumari, named after the temple of Kumari, the virgin, and the attribute of Durga, on India's land, and met the Arabian Sea, the Bay of Bengal, and the Indian Ocean. The temple and village stand on rocks. The Vivekananda Rock Memorial is being constructed here. The aim to be to erect a shrine-like structure that is a mandapam with a bronze statue of the Swamiji installed within on the inlet, on the islet situated in the midst of the sea, about 1,000 feet off the shore of Kanyakumari, where Vivekananda is known to have meditated. There on the shore is also the Mahatma Gandhi Memorial. You know, Swami Vivekananda swam out to that rock. He meditated there, so. From the apex of the Indian subcontinent, I turned my steps to the north. I arrived in Madurai, the second largest city in Madras state, with a population of about 500,000. Madurai is the most ancient city in South India. It has existed uninterruptedly on the banks of the river Vaigai at least for 2,500 years. Manakshi Temple of Madurai is an exquisite example of Dravidian and Tamil architecture and sculpture. It is a twin temple on the south to Meenakshi, the fish-eyed goddess, the consort of Shiva, and the sister of Vishnu, and on the north to Shiva, here called Sundareshwar. I went to this great temple at night as well as in daytime. Of course, I visited the first floor room of Venkataraman's uncle's house, where the youthful Ramana had the great experience of death, which changed his life. It was very gratifying that in the Ramana Mandiram there is that quiet room. It was easy for me to merge into silence. I repeated my visit. The house is situated on Chokappa Natnekia Street, close to the Meenakshi Temple. You know, they leveled that whole house. They leveled the old house, the whole thing. And then they built it back up exactly like it was. And when they leveled it, the walls were 3 feet wide. So they reduced it to half. So they increased the width of it. Also, it's still narrow, right?
Yes.
So they increased it 3 feet. Well, they rebuilt it up.
Why they didn't restore it as it was?
Well, because I guess some deterioration and things. And I mean, you know, I don't know why they did it, but they did it.
The congested street too.
In the 80s, you know, in the 80s they did it.
My father was responsible for the renovation of the
mandir. Okay. I also entered the Madurai College High School, under which name it is now known, near the railway station, which the young Venkataraman attended in the school board. Madurai College High School. That was they keep changing the name. They change the name many times. You've seen the picture of, like, from 1895 of all the schoolboys? Yeah. Did you able to pick out Bhagavan there? I keep looking at it, you know, scanning through it. Something may jump out. Naturally, I always visited the birthplace of Sri Ramana, a small town, Tiruchuli, an administrative center, Taluk, in Ramanathapuram, district of Madras state. It is about 38 miles from Madurai, and I reached it by bus. The house is situated near the many centuries-old temple, the presiding deity of which is called Bhuminathar, and his consort, Sahayavali. We have a verse written in Bhagavan's handwriting on Sahayavali. So you saw it in the closet up there? It's in like a museum-type frame. You open the closet, up in the shrine there, I have some verses in Bhagavan's handwriting.
Okay.
You got to open the closet. We put it in there because we don't want the sunlight to...
Yes.
But I had some museum, you know, framer, and they put it all in non-acid paper and things like this. And you have to open the closet. Turn on the light and open the closet. Mostly verses of Ganapati Muni, Bhagavan had written. But this Sahavali verse also.
I heard from the Kumbhavishekam when they were, the priest was start, you know, the name Sahayavali, one of the family members.
Sahayavali. I think
Akshara's
name is, the middle name is Sahayavali.
Yeah, because I remember there.
When they took the sankalpa.
Yes, the sankalpa.
So immediately I thought about Tirujuli.
Anand's daughter's wooden name.
So via Tiruchirappalli, or the city of the three-headed demon, which is famous for the rock temple, I went back to Madras. Professor T.M.P. Mahadevan arranged a visit to Shankaracharya of Kamakoti Pita, the sage of Kanchi. He is the same Shankaracharya with whom Mr. Paul Brunton conversed about 40 years ago. Later on, Mr. Brunton published this conversation in the book, A Search in Secret India. Sri Shankaracharya gave me audience of 1 hour, which was quite unusual for its length. The sage of Kanchi amazed me with the unexpected question whether I knew the book of Bunyan, The Pilgrim's Progress, famous Christian book. The route of my further journey led me to the sacred city of Puri, dominating Orissa's coast, and later on to the capital of West Bengal, Calcutta. It stands to reason that I visited all the places connected with Sri Ramakrishna and the disciples, Dakshinaswar, and the room where Sri Ramakrishna spent most of his life, and naturally I went to the famous Belur temple. Later on, I visited Banaras, in Sanskrit called Varanasi, sprawling along the left bank of the river Ganga. It is the religious capital of India since times immemorial. In Banaras, I unexpectedly got into the company of the woman, Saint Anandamayimayi, the joy-permeated mother, or Mataji, as her devotees call her, and who is now well-known throughout India. I received from her a floral decoration in the form of a garland with blessings. Next, I proceeded to Sarnath. Here on the spot, which at that time was called the Deer Park, Buddha delivered his first great discourse in the middle of the 6th century BC. Sitting quietly under the trees, he explained his doctrine to the 5 ascetics who had been his former companions, and thus he set the wheel of the law in motion. The Hindu sastras say that no pilgrimage would be complete unless the pilgrim pays a visit to Badrinath on the Tibetan border, far up in the Himalayas. I intended to proceed to Badrinath, but since the Chinese invasion of India, it had become so difficult for foreigners to obtain the necessary permission, etc., that I had to give up the idea, as my stay in Rishikesh was too short for that. I left India for my own country on the 13th October 1968 from Bombay, 1 year after my arrival. I called to mind all Bhagavan had done for me, all he is to me, and how he has influenced my life. My Indian journey didn't follow a scheme carefully made in advance, and yet one thing fitted into another, and may look as a matter of course, but it stirred up my deepest sense of gratitude.
What is his name?
Well, I don't know how to pronounce it, but it's Vaclav Czech, or V-A-C-L-A-V, first name. Vaclav. And his last name is C-E-C-H.
He must have been well connected because he mentioned the name of Kamil Swedenborg. His contribution to Tamil language is great. The Czechoslovakian Tamil scholar. His name comes very popular.
It's probably some academic, you know. I mean,
how much is traveling before the old age?
Those days.
Those days, the 1960s and 1968.